gentlemen, this is the main event. Fight fans worldwide, you've tuned into the number one undisputed boxing podcast today. This is the Boxing Breakdown. Now, your heavy-handed, hard-hitting host, Mark Roxy.
What's up? Welcome to another edition of the Boxing Breakdown, and I am your host, Mark Roxy. I am delighted to be with you, and I'm thanking you for joining us wherever you're listening to the podcast from, whether you are on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for being with us. And without further ado, I am going to welcome my partner in crime, Mr. Harold Hunt, to the program. What's up, Harold?
Hey, man, what's up, man? We are here, man. We got some good stuff today.
Yeah, man, we do. We got lots of good stuff to talk about. I was waiting for you to jump on, and sure enough, there you are. So thank you. Thanks a lot, man. And you can see we got some new graphics going here on YouTube. And if you are listening and watching us on YouTube, thank you for being with us. Please make sure that you like, subscribe, and hit those notifications down below, because that's how we get more people to know about this podcast. And we are delighted that you would do that for us. And we also want to make sure you know when we are going live and when we are doing our thing. And we intend on doing it a lot more often. We're going to have a total revamp, Harold, of the studio here. We are working on really making this thing go to the next level. So we're just about at episode, like, I don't know, we're like 90-something. Our episode, we're at somewhere around 93 or 94, but we're getting round and out, getting close to 100. And folks, if you want to go back and listen to the first podcast or any of the podcasts that we've done in the past, you can find those podcasts. We have a library of the podcasts on RoxySportsEntertainment.com. And you can also find the majority of the podcasts on YouTube. We've been trying to upload a bunch of them, but we've created quite a significant library there on YouTube. Don't have too much traction yet, but once you guys find the podcast, you know what's up. You do know what's up, right, Harold?
Oh, yeah, they do.
Yeah, man. So, you know, I was working on the agenda for tonight and taking a look at the things that we got coming up, man. And so, for those of you tuning in and for Harold, we're going to discuss Ryan Garcia's new trainer. We are going to get into that. And then we're going to break down the Crawford and Spence preview, which I just announced at the top of the show on the opening. And we're also going to talk about Katie Taylor's surprise loss, recent loss against, Chantel Cambron. Yeah. And, yeah, man. And then we're going to close out the program talking about boxing. I thought this would be a really good episode for you, Harold, because we're going to break down bad judges and corruption in the sport.
I have to be guarded with my answers, of course.
But yeah, man. No, we're just going to don't worry. You already know how this is going to go. So let's chop. Let the bell ring, bing, 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 and let's get into the first topic, which is Ryan Garcia and his new trainer. Tell me, Harold.
Yes, he chose Mr. James, who is the trainer of the Charlo brother, who is the undisputed 154-pound champion.
Right.
Not only in that gym is he, you also have Errol Spence is in that gym.
Right.
You also have Frank Martin, who is up and coming, very, very serious 135-pounder.
Yeah.
And Anthony Joshua is in there.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of people he's going to have to emulate, see the work ethic, understand how it works. Now, Ryan has deep pockets, but guess what? Everybody else in there does too. So there is none of that posturing. If he does that, I don't know if he does, but he'll be in the gym where everyone else is just as financially comfortable as he is. So that takes that away. So now he has to actually go in there and work with the trainer in the way he needs to do that. Now he's leaving California and he'll be going to Texas. He's going to get a place in Texas just to train, which is excellent. Now, what we don't know is how many sparring partners are coming from across the world just to go to that gym to spar him.
Yeah.
And the list of people calling his new trainer, James, and asking him, please allow me to come work with him. So he's going to get some good training. He'll get an attitude adjustment because he'll see other people who are very prominent, who do very well. He'll see that work.
Yeah.
He'll see how Earl, who throws 70 punches around, gets into shape. He'll see that chip on the shoulder, dog attitude that the Charlo brother has. He'll see that hungriness that Martin has because he's getting overlooked at 135.
Right.
He's hungry. So when he trains, he works hard. And then you see Joshua, a project. He's coming off all of that. And he left his comfort zone,
right,
England, to come there to be in that kind of environment. So this is great for Ryan. He has to respect the trainer. And he knows he's at a crossroads,
yeah,
because he has the opportunity to get a title at his new weight class and be a huge player.
Yeah, man. I think it's a great opportunity for him. I mean, sure knows it beats a blank. I mean, where he was prior to this choice is really not, it wasn't very good. So, you know, and I'm not talking about Joe Goosen. I'm just talking about his mentality, you know, and all of the things that have led up to where he is right now. I think it's like a really great, it'll be a really great choice for him to be in that kind of a stable. And I definitely think that, you know, some of the skill sets will get sharper for sure, you know, and I know that the world will wait to watch him improve and watch him get better. So let's see what happens, man. I mean, this is great news. You know, he's still a player, you know, I mean, he really is still a player. I mean, as far as the rankings are concerned, he's right up in there. You know, it's not as if his career is over by any means. If you guys are tuning in and you're not, you know, you're not really sure what we're talking about here. You know, Ryan Garcia just took a loss to Javonte Davis, Tank Davis. And, you know, this loss that he took a couple of weeks ago was pretty devastating to him and reverberated around the boxing world. And really, he had an unblemished record prior to that fight. And, you know, many people thought that he had a very good chance. Well, let's just say some people thought that he had a very good chance of beating Javonte Davis. And the fight was one of the most watched boxing events in the recent past. And what's come from that is, you know, big fights are being made. Lots of big fights are being made by lots of other promoters. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today, but it's really, really exciting. For example, well, we're not going to get into that one, but the Devin Haney Vasily Lomachenko fight just took place this past weekend.
Yes.
And man,
there's so much to talk about. But let me go back to the train. Now, he won't be going in that gym, but guess who he has to spar with? Frank Martin, who's a 135 pounder.
Yeah.
Who is prominent.
Oh yeah.
He's got to spar with this guy who needs to prove that he is an elite. So that is going to be some excellent sparring, not to mention the people I'm talking about who are coming in to who we don't know, who can really, really crack, who's really going to give them some great work.
Right.
So that is, I would love to be there for that sparring, Mark. And you know, you've lived your life breathing the air of gyms and seeing sparring.
For sure.
You know, it would be just fantastic to see him spar with Frank Martin in that gym. and try to be the boss of the gym. You know how it is to be the boss of the gym. You know where it is. You know, where there's one fighter, everyone comes in and tries to beat him, but he can't because he runs the gym. He's the best fighter in that gym.
Yeah.
Everybody challenges him, and he keeps his mantle. And we have to see how he's going to fit into that environment, that jungle of that gym there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not air conditioned. It's you've seen it, Mark. It's not air conditioned. It's a warehouse. I mean, he's going to boot camp. He is.
I love that. I mean, I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to say except, hey, I love it. I think it's a great idea. You know, I'm really, really excited about that. And, you know.
And he has the opportunity to become a champion quickly because Rowley has that 140-pounder. Belt that he got, kind of how he got it, but he has it. All right. Roby's not going to fight anybody who can't make him the kind of money. Automatically, Ryan has moved to 140. He gets the opportunity directly
right.
to fight Roby for that 140 title,
yeah.
making him a big player at 140 immediately.
Yeah. Wow. That's big time, man. I mean, hey, look. Good news for Ryan Garcia. I mean, you got the rankings in the lightweight division, 135-pound division. You got Devin Haney, who's still there. He's still at the top of the pack.
How long?
Yeah, well,
135.
We're going to talk about that in a minute. And I mean, you got Gervonta Davis is number one right there in the lightweight division for sure. Vasily Lomachenko is floating right there at number two. And I think there's some news about that. So we're going to come back to that. And then Shakur is there, and you got William Zabetta and Frank Martin, Isaac Cruz, you know, George Cambosos is in there, Ryan Garcia still in there, Jermaine Ortiz is there, Raymond Muratella is there, Muratella, he's still there. So, you know, there's a nice little array of exciting boxers at the 130-pound division right here. You know, this
140. You said 30. You mean 40?
No, I mean 30. I mean 35.
I mean 35.
35. Yeah, I mean.
Is in there too?
Huh?
Is there Regis in there? Regis.
Regis Progre.
Yes.
No. He's at 140 right now.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. He's at 140.
I'm talking about Ryan going to 140. My bad.
No, I'm talking about the fact that Ryan Garcia currently is at 135 and he's still a player. He's still there. I don't know if he's going to go to 140. I know we've got the talks of it, but you know, talk, you could talk all you want until you do it. He's right now still ranked at 135. He's still in the 135-pound division. He is not in the rankings at all at 140. You know, until he has his next fight at 140, he has to actually fight to be put in that ranking. Right. So, yeah, man, I mean, it's anyway, good news for Ryan Garcia. He's it's Derek James, right?
Yes.
Yeah, man. Derek James is a great, great trainer. He's in good hands. There was talks about him going with a whole handful of other trainers, going back to, his old trainers, in the Canelo camp, Eddie Reynoso. Yeah. But that was just talk. Like I said, it's just talk. And at the end of the day, there he is with Derek James. So good for him.
Yes. Good for him.
Yeah, man. And there's going to be big news coming out of that. Cause I'm sure he's going to be fighting and everybody wants to see him back in the ring and, you know, whether or not he's fixed some of those, some of those things that needed to be fixed. Here we go.
Well, you know about Derek James. Okay, we know Charlo is not a volume puncher.
Right.
He's precise. He's clean. He takes his time and he applies the power. Ryan is similar to that, okay? Whereas Spence is a volume puncher.
Yeah.
Fundamentally sound.
Yeah.
Those are two dichotomies that are completely opposite of each other. But James is able to train that for both of them. So I believe that whatever Ryan's going to need, his trainer is going to be able to give it to him. I'm thinking, you know, from my standpoint, he's going to try to kind of work him the way he's worked to Charlo Boy.
Because yeah.
Charlo Boy came over with no power. Well, he had power, but it wasn't applied properly.
Right.
He left his previous trainer, came to James. He developed the power, and now he's a bona fide knockout puncher. He was not before he came to James.
Right.
So Ryan already has that, but Ryan needs to place better and this, that, and that, which I can't really speak to. But I think that James is going to be able to pinpoint those things and make him a more of a precision puncher. And he already has that pop, that one hit a quitter. So it, as you said, Mark, I think it's excellent. I just think the environment that he's going to be in is just going to be just leaps and bounds of what he was used to. I mean, he was doing pads with his brother for the tank fight.
Right.
His brother. So you're not really getting, we're not saying you're not getting what you need, but you know, you need, you know, a different type of work on the pads, not necessarily your brother. So now he's going to get that constant work and that expertise that needs to be applied to his career at this time.
Yeah. I mean, big stuff, you know, definitely big stuff, but here's the thing, Harold. I mean, while it's big stuff, it's really, it pales in comparison of the real big news, which is the Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford fight is going down, baby. Breaking news. It is happening. Whoop, it's going down. So Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford will be fighting on July 29th, Showtime pay-per-view. It's going down, Harold.
Yes, and it is so well structured. Oh my gosh. May I go into it, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, they are going to fight. This is just an outline. They are going to fight on the 29th.
Right.
There in the contract states that whoever loses,
yep,
has a 30-day window to request a rematch. The rematch must take place this calendar year.
Right.
We, as fight fans, will get two fights. We'll get the one in July. Whoever loses is going to invoke the rematch clause, and we'll get another one in October.
Right.
We will get two Spence Crawford fights this year, 2023, which is beautiful. On top of that, whoever wins the second fight,
right,
automatically gets an opportunity to fight for undisputed at 154, being Charlo.
Wow.
Wow. Now, Spence could say Spence loses the first fight.
Yeah.
And he wins the second fight. He gets to fight for the 154. There's not a rubber match between the two.
Right.
They're going to hold that third fight in their pocket for a couple, three, 4 years. But there's going to be two. Whoever wins the second one gets the shot.
Okay.
One may win both of them, or one of them may just win the second one. Whoever wins the second one gets the shot.
Mm. Well,
the loser of the first one could win the second one and get the shot.
Right.
The winner gets Charlo.
Wow.
Of the second fight.
That's great. Beautiful? Yeah, no. I think that's fantastic. If that can happen, and it does happen, it's going to be wonderful for whoever wins. So, you know, it's coming. Harold, it's like a month away.
Yes. Bud's been in training for the past month. He's sparring with Shakur Stevenson, and he's already been sparring.
Yeah.
Earl just opened camp officially last week.
Right. So that's interesting.
Yes.
That's very interesting.
Bud's already been warm. He's already working. He's already been working. But right. Bud stays in the gym.
Yeah.
We know Spence's history, not negative. He enjoys his breaks. And then he comes back very focused. So it's not like one is doing more than the other.
Yeah.
They're just doing their mode of operation, how they go about doing fights.
Right.
Go about working.
Man, these guys, this is an amazing welterweight fight. It's actually reminiscent of some of the great fights in the past, you know, Hearns and Hagler. I mean, this fight's right up there.
Hearns, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's talking about it in the same class. And, you know, Errol Spence is even, you know, they've talked about this and said, no, this is going to be even bigger and better. You guys have no idea. And both of these guys think that they're going to win. Both of them believe in their hearts that they're walking around with the crowns. They're taking all the marbles.
Yes. Let's do some financials.
Yeah. Run them.
10 million plus. We don't know how much over 10, but they both get 10 plus. Now,
wow.
Press conferences. They're going to have a press conference in California, of course, LA.
Right.
One in New York, one in Dallas, and another one in Nebraska. In Nebraska.
Wow.
So that is going to be monumental because they're going to have a press conference, a promotional conference, rather, in each of the fighters' hometowns.
Okay.
That's going to be great. In Dallas and Nebraska, Omaha, and then, you know, the two hubs of the world, New York and L.A.
Right.
So that's going to be spectacular. And as of lately, Bud has been very vocal. He's been saying and talking and sound bites and just all over the place talking. And as you know, previously they said, you know, Bud doesn't talk. You know, he's deadpan. He just goes knock you out. He doesn't want to promote the fight.
Right.
All of that has changed. He is very vocal, very upfront. He's in the mix. So it's a beautiful thing. We always know that Earl is always available to speak about this and that and the other.
Right.
What's ironic was they made the announcement on their own social pages simultaneously. So when he said the fight's going to happen, Earl said on his social media, the other gentleman did the same thing. So that means they're all in accord, Mark, and that is rare, isn't it?
No, it is. It's real. I mean, these guys have been wanting to make this fight forever. And I think that both have got their fingers crossed, their toes crossed, that everything goes all the way to the fight. We got 1 month. And as, I mean, I'm sure the casuals and everybody else, all the pundits, everybody is just, you know, this is like a feast, man. We come off of, you know, the Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis fight.
Yes.
You know, you got the
Haney fight.
Yeah, you got the Haney fight with Vasily Lomachenko. You got the Teofimo Lopez and Josh Taylor fight coming up soon, too.
Before that, we had Canelo. Canelo, that was a great fight.
Yeah, no, it's been, you know, it's been outstanding, actually.
Yes. And we still have the NOA and Fulton fight to come, which is excellent. Oh, my gosh. The skill level of that is just great. So it's hot property. Hot property. The undercard. The undercard, we don't even know yet. You know, Mark, they're going to stack that undercard. The undercard is such a big financial fight. The main event is very, very expensive.
Right.
But the undercard is going to be less. It's not going to be high paying, but the reward is being on the card in this situation, not necessarily the money. Because that, you know, you got $20 million right there plus in salaries for the two main fighters.
Right.
And that doesn't leave much for everybody else, but you got to get some notable people. But the exposure, Mark, like you said, worldwide.
Oh, my gosh.
Being on that card is worth the is worth the truncated purse. Instead of making maybe, you know, $300,000, you know, they may make half of that.
Right.
But that means their next fight away from this fight is going to be lucrative because they were seen by the entire world, the entire casual world, every continent, every, this is Floyd and Pacquiao.
This is big. This is big. We've been waiting for this again. This is definitely a fight that we've been waiting for years. It's been years in the making. And, you know, at the time of this podcast, you should know that, you know, Spence holds the WBC, WBA, IBF titles, and Crawford has the WBO belt. So, you know, it's a four belt era, five belt era, whatever belt era it is, but we're going for all the marbles here. And it's a big event, and you will not want to miss this fight for sure.
So they are scheduled to do late night. They're scheduled to do so many different things that are available for the casual people who really don't know boxing.
Yeah.
Just like Mayweather and Pacquiao did. We got the NBA finals coming up. We got still have baseball. So we're going to have pitches thrown out. We're going to have appearances at ball games. We're going to have.
Yeah, of course. Oh, I mean, they're going to market this thing like crazy.
Man, it's going to be, you know, and if they're not, they will be known. No doubt they will be known. And I'm excited because the public really doesn't know them. But guess what? They are going to get a crash course on these two guys really quickly.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And, you know, more to come. I think probably our next podcast. Now, I know our next podcast will definitely feature a full breakdown of the Errol Spence, the Errol Spence and Crawford fight. We're going to break down styles. We're going to break down advantages that each one of the fighters has. We're going to talk about weight. We're going to talk about coming up, going down. We're going to break all that down. So if you're into the odds, I will tell you that now, if you are going to place your bets, the sooner you do it, the better off you're going to be. Because later on, it's not going to be very, you know, the odds are not going to be very good. They're going to be pretty crappy when you get real close to the fight. But now you have a chance with a true 50-50 fight to really make some money, man. Big money. So DraftKings, all you guys, you know, all these betting sites, you know, please hit us up here at the Boxing Breakdown. We'd love to run a commercial for you. We'd love to do that for you. So, yeah, we would want to do that. We think it's great that the boxing fans are in there drawing the line in the sand for who they think they can that's going to win. So we love that. So Harold, let's push on, man. Let's push on to this Katie Taylor, Chantel Cameron fight. Were you able to catch that fight?
I saw some highlights.
Okay.
I read a lot about it.
Yeah.
I followed Katie Taylor before.
Okay.
And as you know, she was not successful. Now, it's amazing that she wasn't successful because she fights how she always does. She's very aggressive. She's coming forward. She was just in a situation where I believe Chantel, who's a champion, had a career night. She had one of those days or nights or performances that just doesn't come up all the time.
Right.
And because Katie Taylor was prime and her style beats any weight class. It's not about the weight. It's not about the weight. It was about Chantel came in knowing and feeling that she would win that fight. And she did exactly that.
Yeah, she sure did. And I enjoyed the fight. I enjoyed the fight very much. Something didn't seem right there. Something on the Katie Taylor. Yeah, for me, it just didn't seem like the quintessential Katie Taylor. Something seemed a little bit off. Can't get my finger on that. You know, at the end of the fight, it was a majority decision. 60. The scores were 96-94, 96-94, and 95-95. And so Chantel Cameron did retain her undisputed junior welterweight title Saturday, the Saturday that passed, and handed Taylor really her first pro loss ever. Man, it was the first time that she's lost, and I'm wondering what happens next.
She goes back down and defends her title, and she won't lose anymore.
She looked small in the fight. She looked small, like she really looked smaller. And from the onset in round one, Chantel Cameron was pressing forward, driving behind the jab, pressing forward, throwing 1-2s right down the pike, going to the body when it was appropriate, coming back to the head with a hook and right back to the 1-2. And there was Katie Taylor was fighting on the back foot pretty much the entire time. So she's moving and dodging and covering up and trying to steal shots, but she's on her back foot pretty much the majority of the fight. There were a couple of rounds where she really stepped up and she was banging hard with Chantel Cameron, trying to get her out of there. But I just think the size differential really did, you know, it did have an effect. What do you think, Harold?
Yeah, I agree. The mentality, this is a smaller fighter.
Yeah.
When, even if your skill set may not be on par with the fighter that's coming up to fight you from another division.
Yeah.
Mentally, this is a smaller fighter. That is very paramount in your mind.
Right.
You know, yeah, I may not have the skill set or you won't think that, but this is a smaller fighter. She fought her like, I'm the big fighter. You're the small fighter.
Yeah.
Katie could have came with anything. I mean, her best, Chantel, in her mind was like, this is a smaller fighter. Right. I'm the bigger fighter. There is no way I lose this. There's no way. She's too small for me.
Right.
Like in basketball, when somebody gets crammed on the player puts his hand down low on the floor saying, too small, too small. That is exactly her mentality. And that's why she just stepped to her and just walked her down. This is a little girl. She's a baby.
Right.
I'm just going to take this from her. She shouldn't have came up here. She should just wait for a surround to get well. She shouldn't have done this. This was a bad idea. You're going to pay for that. And she paid for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we say it was a bad idea, whose idea you think it was? You think it was Eddie Hearn's idea or what? What do you mean?
I'm going to, well, Katie had to fight. It fell out.
Yeah.
She wanted to fight. She had done the training. She had been working or whatever. And she's chasing legacy. So she turned around and saw that fighter was available.
Yeah.
And that fight was available. And she took it.
Yeah.
Because she didn't want to waste a training camp. She didn't want to waste the fitness levels that she had gone through. She didn't want to waste the discipline that she had put in for that fight. She wanted to use where she was,
right.
She figured that, you know, she could be undisputed in two weight classes while she's at it.
Right.
However, it didn't work that way. And it didn't come out the way that she would have liked.
Yeah. No, it sure didn't. It sure didn't come out the way she would have wanted it to go. And, yeah. And, you know, interestingly enough, Serrano's got a fight coming up. She's actually scheduled to fight Heather the Heat Hardy. And that fight's coming up pretty soon. So, you know, I think that was a prelude. You know, the winner of that fight was going to get Katie Taylor. So now, you know, things get shifted around a little bit. Maybe it still happens. I don't know. I don't know if it's still, you know, the kind of mega fight it would have been. But certainly the fight itself can still happen. I just don't know that it's going to be at the magnitude that it was because of the loss. But what do you think about that?
Oh, it's still going to happen because she's going to go back down to her weight class and everything is hunky-dory. See, just like Canelo moved up and lost, right?
Right.
We gave him a pass.
Right.
He was bold enough and strong enough to try to go up there and take that man's title, but he didn't.
Yeah.
So he gets to come back down where he was previously, and no fall, no foul, no harm, no foul. Yeah. Same thing with Katie. She's going to get the same situation. She dared to be great. She dared to move up. You get a pass for that kind of stuff.
Right.
Now she gets to come down, stay in her weight class, and she'll be successful. She'll be just as popular.
Yeah.
All of that.
Mm-hmm.
That loss will not tarnish her at all. And she didn't get beat up.
Yeah.
She just was a smaller fighter.
Yeah. So, you know, in that fight, it was not only was she a smaller fighter, but just in the punch stats of that fight, Taylor threw 111 punches. Cameron threw 141 total land punches. Total thrown, Taylor threw 284, and Cameron threw 565 punches. Percentage wise, Taylor landed 39% of her punches, while Cameron landed 25% of those punches. Jabs landed were 21 to 27, 21 for Taylor, 27 for Cameron, and so on. You know, I mean, basically the total percentage for Taylor was 46% of her punches and combined, and Cameron was 34%. So, you know, I mean, it was clearly, you know, the number of punches thrown, the total number of punches were actually double. And they were harder too. They were harder. For those of you that did not see the fight, Chantel Cameron was throwing the better connected punches. They were landing. They were hard shots. Yeah. And I just think, you know, it was a size, like you said, Canelo Bivel fight is a good example, a very, very good example of, you know, just daring to be great and sliding out and okay, let's get back to what we do. And let's cross our fingers that we got a lot of good stuff coming out of, Katie Taylor.
Oh, we do. We do.
Yeah.
She's in her prime. She's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's good.
Yeah. I know she's good. Let's just pray that she's good, you know, and she shouldn't be taking punches like that in the future. And so we're going to round out the program here with our last topic of discussion. And that is going to be boxing, right? So we watched the Devin Haney, Vasily Lomachenko fight and, you know, yeah, it was a great fight. It was actually probably one of the hardest fights as a judge to score. I think, you know, I mean, Harold and I both judge, and Harold is a professional boxing judge. I've been judging in the amateurs for, you know, several, almost two decades. And, you know, we know what that is. And so at the end of the day, it's not an easy fight to judge, even if you're completely engaged 100% on. And we know that when you watch a fight from home, you know, you're most likely going to give the round to the person that you believe won the round and also the one that you favor, especially if it's an even round. If the two rounds are even and you're favoring someone, you will give that round to the person you're favoring from, you know, as a spectator, even I do that unconsciously and I judge. So watching a fight is not the same as scoring a fight as a professional judge following the criteria and the years of training and experience that goes into both watching and judging bouts. So, you know, I think that's really, really important to just underscore before we get into this, and I'll come back to that later. But you saw in the Devin Haney and Vasily Lomachenko fight, more controversy than I can't remember when there's been so much controversy around a fight. And personally, I had it scored, you know, completely different than many of my colleagues and people that watched the fight. And I got to the point where I was like, listen, I'm just not even going to really have a conversation with you about who won the fight. Because you're convinced who won the fight. And you have no experience in judging, nor do you have any experience in what you're seeing. So, you know, good for you. You know, Monday water cooler quarterbacking or whatever you want to call it. But there is something to bad judges. And there's a lot of boxers and teams that have lost their careers because of bad judging or corruption behind the scenes in our sport. And so, Harold, I wonder if you could just touch a little bit upon that, and then we'll get into this conversation.
I just want to qualify myself here. I've done huge fights, you know, the pay-per-views and showtimes and all that. And I work with judges like that. I don't remember working with him. I may have, but whatever. The point is, when you're in a situation like that and it's tight like that, he did exactly what he thought he saw. And what he saw was experience. He knows what he saw. We all have a different idea of what we see. Now, me personally, I saw it differently, but I wasn't there. When I judge a fight, it's not fun. It's work. You have to concentrate and give the best effort for each round.
Right.
When I just watch a fight as a spectator, it's fun. I can enjoy it. And of course, you're going to be biased because you like who you like. But when you judge, you cannot have any of that. And it takes years to be able to suppress that and judge that fight as you see it. Now, he did what he thought he saw, what he saw. And that is, I can't say nothing negative about that because I'm not looking through his eyes. Now, the world and other people see it differently. Mark, you know what you're talking about, and so do other people. But on that given night and that given day, that's what he saw. So I can't say he was incorrect. I can't say he was correct. I just know that he notated the scorecards the way he saw it. So, yes, I had differently, but I wasn't wearing the hat of a judge. I was a fan. So I thought, you know, it went another way, but I understand the thought process and I cannot say anything about that. But I will say sometimes when you're out there and you're doing that and it's a level like that, you could be intimidated. He was not intimidated. He's been doing it since the 70s.
Right.
So he was not intimidated. So nothing shook him. He wasn't shaken by the magnitude. He wasn't shaken by the crowd. He wasn't shaken by any of that. So
yeah,
that can't be blamed. Only thing that could not be blamed, but he saw it the way he saw it. So he wasn't influenced. He wasn't bribed. He wasn't none of that. That's just what he saw. So from my standpoint, it's going to go one way or the other. The rounds were tight. The rounds were tight. But Mark, as you know, each round is a fight. And the beginning of the round, the one guy could be winning. How I do it, I'm saying red, 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 red corner. Then blue. My mom's saying blue, 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 blue. Then red, then red, red, red. And then we get to the close to the end of the round, you got blue again. Blue, yeah. Blue, 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 blue. And then at the end of the round, bing, ding, I have to decide which red or blue was the most prominent amongst other criteria that I use.
Right.
I'm just stating one here.
Yeah.
That is how it goes. So when you're a judge like that, you know who's winning the first part of the round, the second part of the round, third part of the round, who is the last part of the round. You add those up, you have an idea who may have won the round.
Right.
Oh, and some judges like aggressiveness. When you're aggressive and you're stepping in that pocket, you're coming forward, they count that. Other judges are okay with you backing up and landing cleanly. Other judges like when they're throwing the punches and you're making a miss, you're making a miss, you're making a miss, and you're scoring. So just so many criteria. Everyone has their own separate style. He's an impeccable judge, in my opinion. He just had a situation, not negatively, it was converse to the overall thought process of everyone else. That's all. I have to say that because that's really how I feel, because I've been in his shoes. I've been there where it's loud and huge and there's people just screaming and it's crazy. You have to really understand what you're doing. So I applaud him. He's taken a lot of scuttlebutt, and I'm sure, Mark, you're going to go into why you think it was a little different than what he saw.
Yeah.
The main thing is he saw through his eyes, and that's what he saw.
Well, I mean, yes, I definitely think that it isn't the first time that this particular judge scored a round completely contrary to what was actually happening in the round. And that, you know, what I'm speaking about is particularly round number, I think it was round number 10 in the fight. Yes. Where Lomachenko clearly won that round. There wasn't a question in anybody's eyes, any viewpoint that you were looking at that could say that Haney wasn't completely hurt. And, you know, Lomachenko, you know, in that particular round had the aggressive, he was effective, he was aggressive, he was moving forward, he was landing the punches, his defense was sharp in that round, and he did clearly, convincingly win that round. And at the end of the, you know, when you look at the scorecards, you know, those scores were not aligned with that. And I think that was the only question that I really had about that. But Harold, here's the thing, you know, he saw what he saw. And one of the things that I think is important for the listeners to understand is I brought up on the screen, if you're not on YouTube, you're not going to be able to see this, but, you know, imagine you're sitting around the ring and the ring you know, there's a blue corner, there's a red corner, there's a, two neutral corners there, and the ring is elevated, and the judges are sitting down on the three sides, right? And then you've got a supervisor, et cetera, et cetera. You got the doctor, everybody, you know, everybody's at ringside. In the amateurs, it's not much different, except oftentimes there are five judges, and in the five judges, at any one time, three of the judges are in play. So three judges work, two judges are not, and those get rotated. So just so you guys understand the difference between pro and amateur, right? In the pros, there are three judges at ringside. So here's the thing. This is the thing that's beautiful, and it's also tragic about our sport. Tragic. Yeah, because the judge that's watching is positioned usually right in the middle of the, you know, in between, you know, the red corner and the neutral corner, the blue and the neutral corner, and the blue and the neutral corner, right? So whatever, however they're positioned directly in the center. They're usually on a chair. Sometimes they're elevated. Sometimes they're not. And when you have that viewpoint, three people are watching. Think of it like a car accident. Three people are watching the same car accident. Everybody has a different story about what happened. Because you could be watching that car accident from your car. You could be watching the car accident from your window up high. Or you could be watching the car accident from the other car. And you're all going to see that car accident completely different. And the same is true when you're sitting around the ring. What judge number one sees is not going to be what judge number two sees. It very rarely is. And likewise, judge number two and three are going to have completely different vantage points of that fight. And then you add in the boxers and their skill sets, and both and boxing, we know how to make our work seen, and we know how to make our work disappear. And we know how to confuse the judges, and we know how to, you know, tie up on the ropes and, you know, take 3 minutes away from, or excuse me, 30 seconds away from judge number one, or we know these things. These are parts of the game. It's part of the sport of boxing. So what happens is you've got the referee in there. And now the referee is standing right in front of you and you cannot see past his legs. You can't see the action. Meanwhile, it was a 1-2-3 that got landed that turned the tide of the fight. But you didn't see it. And because you didn't see it, you are not able to score it. You cannot score what you do not see, even if you think it happened. And so those are really, really important pieces to really understand about boxing and about the sport and how scores get tabulated and sometimes how they're completely cattywampus. They are. So go ahead, Harold.
But that's the beauty. That's the beauty of our sport.
It is.
It's so crazily skewed. It, like I say all the time, it stinks, but it smells so good. It's beautiful, but it's so ugly. All at the same time.
Right.
And that is why we have this dialogue. That's why we have this back and forth. Because it's such an exacting type of thing. But this kind of thing will go down in history. We'll always talk about this, right, that, and the other. Now, there's a bad part where people lose their careers and this, that, and the other. But this is what we signed up for. This is boxing. Boxing does this. Boxing does it. Yes, I've been in a situation where the referee's all in the way, and I am trying my best to get around him or whatever, but if there's a knockout ensuing, he's standing behind.
You can't see.
I can't see.
And you can't
see. Like you said, the boxer, he knows if he's on a certain side, he can hit that guy illegally, and the ref won't see it, and the judges, we won't see it either.
Right.
So there's so many different things. As you say, the discipline to gain advantage is there. So I understand what you're saying. You just cannot see. Now, that model that they use in the amateur, the five judges, and you don't know who's in play, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that would ever be incorporated in pro boxing only because this element of uncertainty is a given.
Right.
This is something that is is in place that is used as an advantage. And it's just what it is, Mark. But Mark, you know how it works. You know where it goes and all that. So all I can say is you're absolutely right. Sometimes you can't see. And sometimes the boxer positions you so you can't see.
Yes.
And sometimes the referee, he doesn't move like he needs to sometimes.
Yes.
When he sees a knockout ensuing, he may stand still. The real good ones, they understand that they got to keep moving.
Wow.
Even though it's getting ready to be a knockout, he knows he needs to give the other judges situations. I talked to Benny Estevez. He is a prominent referee. He's one of my mentors and what have you. And he told me not to look. Mark, at the fight we were at, Mark,
yes,
that we did together, mm-hmm. I commentated with you.
Yeah.
He told me himself, he said, when I see a knockout coming, I keep moving.
Yeah.
A lot of referees will stand there and wait for it to finish off. I keep moving because the judges need to see
absolutely.
What's landing, what's not landing. Some judges, some referees do that, some don't. So it all depends on the skill set of the fighters, of the referee, and of the judges, how astute they are and what they're seeing.
Yeah.
So there's so many gray areas to this. It's just so unexact, but that's the beauty.
Yeah. And to your point, you know, the art of the referee, you know, the referees are highly skilled and highly trained, most of them, not all of them, but most of them. And the manner in which you move around the ring is all, rehearsed and trained, and you know, you have to really know what you're doing when you're in there refereeing, because again, you can really sway the tide of the fight in many, many ways. You are there to be impartial and you are to keep the fighter safe. And so there's a whole art, and we'll talk about that on another podcast. But right now, I just wanted to say to you, Harold, that there's two things before we go. The first thing is that the skills that both of those fighters, Devin Haney and Vasily Lomachenko, exhibited in their fight, their first fight, we haven't had the second fight, was absolutely impeccable. It was amazing. And if you are in boxing and you're a judge or you have any role in a sport of boxing, whatever the role might be, that night that Vasily Lomachenko and Devin Haney fought, it was one of the most interesting fights that I think I've ever observed, because it was really, going back and watching it again, what I really got about it is that these two were playing, you don't play boxing, but they were playing on such a high level that the ebbs and the flows, the controlling, the distancing, the defensive prowess, the skill sets, that the coaching on both sides was so immense that these were some of the most difficult rounds to score in any professional boxing match you'd ever see. And so I encourage anybody who wants to learn to be a judge, or wants to learn to be a trainer, or wants to learn to be a referee or anything in the sport of boxing, that you watch that fight, because the skill sets that were deployed on both sides, I'm still watching it. I'm going to go watch it again, because they were truly, Harold, incredible. The effective aggressiveness, right? The defensive responsibility that was
the strategy from round to round,
the adjustments were incredible. But you know, effective aggressiveness, both of them, they knew exactly where they were on the scorecards. They knew exactly where they were trying to be on the scorecards, and they knew how they were going to get there, and they pushed, and it was a classic example of, you know, the guy who has the best angles fighting the guy who has the, you know, the longest reach fighting the guy who has a, you know, impeccable defense from, long range and, you know, mid range and close range. And you could go and break that fight down and really learn a lot of things about the sport of boxing. If you want, folks, do it. because it's incredible. And then the other thing I wanted to say is right after the fight, now this week we got, you know, on the rankings, guess who's number one?
Tell me.
Vasily Lomachenko.
As he should.
They put him number one. So they, meaning the sanctioning, the alphabets, right? They put him at number one. So guess what? They're trying to say that there should be another fight. And hopefully they'll make the fight again, because I'd pay to see it again for sure, because as a trainer and a, you know, a savant of boxing.
Yes, connoisseur.
Connoisseur, savant, you know, whatever you want to call me, you know. Whatever you want to say about what you think I am, I'm saying I need to watch them fight again, because it's like candy. It's like candy to the candy store. It's incredible. Like, you go to the candy store, you know, take me to the candy shop, because these guys are incredible. And that fight, the skills made that fight something that will be in the history books later on in many years to come. People go back and study that fight because it was that freaking good. And if Lomachenko is given another opportunity, I would love to see what would happen again. Now, some people say Devin will beat him even better. Some people would say that Vasily Lomachenko is not going to allow that to happen. Okay, keep talking. Let's make the fight. Make me that fight. And then if Devin Haney decides to jump up to 140, which he's been talking about, guess what that does? That opens up the door for you know who. Shakur Stevenson. He's right there, which means that there could be a fight for a vacant opportunity between Shakur Stevenson and Vasily Lomachenko to fight.
Which is another cerebral affair.
No, I'm saying. So now Devin Haney goes up, vacates the belts. It's vacant. Now they're going to fight for that one. That could be amazing.
Yes.
That could be amazing, because Vasily Lomachenko still, he's, you know, he ain't old. Don't even talk about being old. He's not old. He proved that. He proved that in the fight. Devin Haney proved that he can, you know, swing with the best of them. And he certainly can go up to 140 and start to dominate up there. He looked good. He looked great. You know, so I'm, you know, man, we've had a great episode tonight, Harold. Boxing Breakdown was on fire tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It's been a really good one. And I thank you for being on the podcast. I thank you for listening to the podcast, wherever you get your podcast, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, doesn't matter.
We're all over, baby.
And don't forget to hit the like, subscribe, and the notifications on the YouTube channel at The Boxing Breakdown. And if you want to see all the episodes, the library of episodes going all the way back to Teofimo Lopez Live, we've had so many great talents on the show. Yeah. So don't forget to go to RoxySportsEntertainment.com. You can see all of them right there on, under The Boxing Breakdown. And yeah, there's going to be more coming from us. We got lots of great news. Do not miss the fights tonight. Alexis Rocha is going to be fighting Anthony Juice Young tonight on DAZN. I'm jumping off this podcast. I'm going right over there and I'm going to check out that fight, because he is being, the fight is promoted on DAZN, but it is by Oscar De La Hoya and promotions, and Hard Hitting Promotions as well. So let's go, Manny. Let's go, Manny Rivera from Hard Hitting Promotions. Let's go, Anthony Juice Young, get the work done and the new, and bring that belt back to the New Jersey, Philadelphia area. We're crossing our fingers. And one more thing, I just want to shout out my really dear friend, amazing fighter. Love working with him, and wishing him a speedy recovery. I mean, you already know. I don't have to go into detail about it, but yeah. So I just want to wish you well. You know who I'm talking about. You do know who I'm talking about, right? Yeah. Okay. So peace and love. We'll see you on the next episode of The Boxing Breakdown. On behalf of Harold Hunt, I am Mark Roxy, and this is the Boxing Breakdown.
Fight fans, join host Peace. Mark Roxy and special guests as they break down all aspects of the boxing world, including news, business, management, training, promotions, fan reactions, upcoming events, matchups, future boxing stars, title fights, state of the boxing world, and all the stuff you don't see when you watch boxing. This podcast is released each week on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Live streamed on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook Live. It's the Boxing Breakdown, hosted by Mark Roxy. Thank you.